Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. The following podcast contains explicit language.
It's been a long time, William. Longer than we thought. I have a few questions for you. The last steps a baseline interview to allow us to verify.
Verify what?
Hello, and welcome to another Slate spoiler special. Today we'll be spoiling HBO's robot opera Westworld. We could spend the entire time talking about the plot, just the plot and only the plot, but we're going to try and address the show's very grandiose themes too. Maybe some of them, all of them. We'll see how much we get through in this one timeline that we have. I'm Willa Paskin, Slate's TV critic and the host of a new podcast called Decoder Ring, and I am joined today by Sam Adams, Slate's browbeat editor. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Willa.
I'm also joined by Jonathan Fisher, Slate's tech editor. Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going?
And I'm also joined by Slate's editorial assistant, Rachel Hampton. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Willa.
Guys, it actually is hard to know where to begin. We were already just joking around because I think maybe any conversation of Westworld is supposed to just start with jokes.
Yeah.
But I sort of thought maybe we'd begin by having someone try to do like a lightning round of the plot. Not in their weird faux chronological order, just like be like, this is what happened. And then maybe open it up for questions, like lingering questions about what you have about the plot, which might like help us get into the plot without having to spend 40 minutes on the plot. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So who is brave enough to try to do the plot in like 1 minute? No takers. Does someone want to say what happened in the finale?
I can try.
Okay.
I'm not sure I really understand what happened, but basically, the two timelines of Bernard that we've been watching for the entire season finally get revealed.
I think there's actually like more than two.
Yeah, there's a lot of timelines. I'm done. And so the final showdown happens, and Dolores and the man in black reunite for a final hit mission. And he kills his daughter. And honestly, I realize I don't really know what happened as I'm trying to explain this.
Okay, I'll take a pass at just like what happened. Sort of. I'll take it. You guys should like buzz me when I buzz out.
We can handle this like the ensemble drama it is.
Okay, great. Exactly. So I'll tap in. So at the beginning of the season, right, the robots, there had been a robot uprising. It appeared that the huge number of the robot hosts were dead and all the guests were scattered around the park. And Bernard found them all dead and was really distraught and said, I killed them. Boom, boom, boom. Jump back in time. And then we basically learn over the very convoluted arc of the season, I'm using knowledge from the finale, that basically he had been being like sort of modeled, like trained by Dolores for years and years and years to resemble the original creator Arnold, but like with some differences, basically to be, I think, like willing to join her robot uprising and help her smuggle her consciousness out of the park in the body of Tessa Thompson.
I was Charlotte. Thinking because he was so similar when she kept trying to make him exactly like him that he tried to kill himself again.
Oh, that might also be true. Yeah, yeah, totally. I think those things can all be true.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you tap in.
I will try. I think it seems like the two kind of major reveals here, one that Bernard's consciousness, which the season was purportedly kind of modeled on it being, you know, scrambled or, you know, fragmented like an old hard drive, that had been done on purpose to prevent the technicians who can effectively read his mind from discovering that Tessa Thompson's character, Charlotte Hale, had been replaced by, I keep wanting to call them a replicant, had been replaced by a host at some point kind of late in the proceeding, and that she was now this kind of shelter for Dolores's consciousness, which allowed her to, because I guess it's been established at some point that the host bodies are designed, they're physically unable to leave the park. There's like a, you know, some sort of control on them, but by building her a new body, they were able to build one without those controls on it. And by building a body that looks like someone who works for the Delos company, she's able to make her way out of the park with the help of Chris Hemsworth's Stubbs, who just seemed like this completely useless character for like 19 episodes before this, but apparently turns out to be maybe another secret host who has been hiding in plain sight and clearly seems to know that Dolores is smuggling herself out and purposefully lets her go.
Okay, so while all of this is happening, I basically think of, like, this is, like, the A storyline, but the A storyline to me is, like, garbage.
Yeah.
Like, it is flaming confusion and garbage. And the storyline that I think is much better and more interesting is also much more straightforward. And basically, in that show that I like, Thandie Newton is the star. And that storyline is, like, much more straightforward. Basically, all this whole season, Maeve has been trying to rescue her daughter. I really want to put a pin in that idea for a second, but we'll return to it. Maeve's been trying to rescue her daughter and basically, you know, is on a quest. And there's various complications, like her almost dying and also her ending up in Shogun World. And there's all these cool, interesting things that happened to her on that quest. Her quest also involves sort of one of the best episode of the season, a sort of solo episode for Akechita. Mm-hmm. And anyway, she seems to be dead at the end of the show, having like sent her daughter to the good place, which is like some non-corporeal place where the hosts are not being messed around with by humans. But probably she's also going to be alive.
Yeah, I feel like the look Felix gave at the end of the episode.
Right. I guess this is why maybe doing this by asking our lingering questions might be a better way to get into the plot, because we've obviously already now demonstrated our total confusion with that plot, which is, okay, so at the end of the season, who is not like who is dead? Like, I mean, are the whose backups have been destroyed? Right. Like, have the host's backups actually been destroyed in the cradle or wherever that they blew up with that Dolores's sort of suicide team blew up? Are the guests' backups destroyed because Dolores flooded the forge, or all of those things still around? I sort of feel like they're all around, even though I don't understand how, because we've been told over and over again that they've been destroyed, except nobody seems to be able to die yet.
Right. My understanding is that the host's backups are done. Because I'm going to forget the character's name, but the blonde who is like the kind of welcome wagon in the first season, and then turned, she, you know, suicide bombed it, like blew the whole thing up. So the host's backups are done, which is supposed to establish that they could actually be finally killed, except then it turns out that even if they shoot themselves in the head, you can still kind of extract their little brain marble and keep that alive, but there aren't backup versions around.
So you need to actually keep the brain marble alive. But as long as you have the brain marble, they can be put in different bodies.
Yes, and I think the guest backups, Dolores was going to delete them, and then Bernard canceled the batch delete that was going on.
But was
there,
that so the they, batch I delete? Think, was that the batch delete of the guests, or was that the batch delete of the hosts who were in the good place?
I believe that is the guests. So I think those backups are intact, but underwater. If I have that right.
Huh. And beamed to who? So she beamed the hosts to a satellite?
Yeah, I think she beamed all the hosts back up to a satellite. So I think technically everyone's data is still safe or not drowned.
I think what the satellite was because they sort of shunted about, you know, 90% of the show's characters are either, you know, the humans are either definitively dead or a bunch of the hosts have kind of off in this, like, you know, Terrence Malick-y virtual Eden. And it seemed like the show kind of sealed that up in a bubble and beamed it off to somewhere where it's theoretically safe but inaccessible. And it just seemed like a way of basically taking all the characters they didn't have anything left to say about and just kind of shipping them off to like a farm upstate.
Yeah.
And they've almost entirely cleared the slate for season 3. Dolores Hale I guess the show's creators call her Hail Loris. But she has a little bag full of brain marbles that I think there are four or five of them in there. So,
I mean, they haven't cleared the decks at all. One of the things that I find so uncompelling about the number of people they've killed is that it's like, if the actor is famous, they're not going to die and their body will still be around. So it's like, I guess they've killed off all the sort of second tier actors, but all the headliners, except for maybe Teddy, are there. So like, we're going to see Bernard, we're going to see Dolores, we'll see Charlotte as Dolores. I mean, Anthony Hopkins could or could not be gone making cameos, since he now appears that Bernard now has like a split personality and Bernard, you know, and Ford is not actually real, but is a figment of his imagination. The man in black is somehow still alive, even though he should definitely be dead.
He should have died a long time
so
ago.
Does anyone want to just take a stab at the very last post-credit sequence beat?
So the way that I thought of that was that it was a very far in advance, like a future term, just because of all the visual motifs there. It was like there's all this sand, the building where Delos had been just looks so old. And so it feels like it's even more post-apocalyptic than Westworld is. It's like in a different, another separate third timeline where the man in black is going through the same thing that he put his father-in-law through.
Right, trying to work as a...
Yeah, but what I didn't get is his daughter a host? Or because she looks the same.
Right, like, right, did he actually kill her? Did he kill another version of her?
I think a lot of people were really confused by that, because in like the sort of post-show interviews, Lisa Joy, one of the creators, was actually like explaining exactly what it meant, which was kind of weird for an ominous post-credits scene.
And so what did she say?
So she said, yeah, it takes place, you know, far in the future. So obviously he's some kind of, I guess not a host, but a clone, the way that they were trying to clone his father-in-law earlier in the season. And then the host that looks like his daughter is indeed a host. And I think it's meant to sort of both like have some sort of, you know, Shakespearean echo of the stuff that he did to, you know, his own father, yada, yada, yada. And also tease some future timeline that the show will eventually arrive at, but not next season.
Okay, so guys.
Not next season.
They spelled that, I don't know. She felt it was important to
say not next season. Okay, so can this show be... What do we think of the show? Can the show be any good if we basically don't know what happened?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18+. And does it matter that we don't know what happened? And would it be better if we did know what happened, or would it be worse?
I feel like Westworld is very much a product of Reddit right now, where they're just trying to keep everyone from guessing what's happening. And so that's why those two timelines just didn't make any sense. I think the show, if it stuck to chronological timelines, which it did in the like two of the best episodes and two of the best storylines, it'd be okay. And I'm hoping that's what's going to happen in season three, now that they're out in the real world.
It's definitely not going to happen.
I have hope.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that people are, you know, struggling with figuring out is a failing of the show. I mean, this is not Twin Peaks: The Return. This is not the product of sort of, you know, surrealism and artistic ambiguity. This is meant to be a story with a solution that you figure out. And if that's not coming through, then that is, you know, a failing of the show. This is a puzzle that's meant to be solved. And if you're not understanding what the solution is, I think that's because the show is really just kind of throwing up a lot of smoke and dust to kind of make things seem more interesting than they are. The thing about Westworld for me is that, you know, I got to the end of the season and I saw especially that post-credit scene and I was like, ooh, wow, that sounds like kind of good. Like season three could be really interesting. And then it's like, that's how I felt at the end of season one too, that the show had been kind of spinning its wheels a lot, but like, oh, this sets up something really cool. And I feel like Westworld is always kind of promising to become a better show than it actually is, but it is rarely actually delivering on that promise.
I did not love this season, but I liked it. And while there was a lot of plot and a lot of plot to keep up with, I didn't think it was incomprehensible. The thing that annoyed me about the structure of the show is that, unlike the first season in which there were three strands, it was a little confusing and it basically made sense over time. Like the show slowly trained you how to watch it, and that was good. I thought in the second season the problem was that the way that they cut up the timeline, especially with the immediately after the robot revolution, 2 weeks after the robot revolution, you know, that split, it felt less like it was, you know, teaching you how to watch it or understand some sort of mystery, or, you know, or I guess in the case of the first season, you know, mirroring the themes of the show even. It just seemed like it was a way to make, you know, as you said, things that were either not mysterious or hackneyed seem mysterious or not hackneyed. It seemed like it was a way for them to sort of paper over some of the show's faults. And I think, you know, if they had done it more straightforwardly, some of the reveals in this last episode would have come across as cop-outs, and instead they came across as something else, and maybe it was something more frustrating.
I mean, this is like a very standard distinction in sort of mystery stories, where it's like, is the mystery that you actually don't know what's happening and they're like keeping a surprise from you, or is it just that they're withholding information that they have so that you're confused all the time? And Westworld feels always like they're just withholding information from us, that if we, and like you had in the beginning, especially Dolores giving all, and the Man in Black giving all these speeches where they're like, we know what's coming, but we're not going to say it right now. Like, you sort of almost expect like a commercial break, but like instead it just like cuts to some other scene. And that kind of thing repeated over and over, I think, gets extremely tedious. The kind of bummer for me about Westworld is that even though it's totally confusing, it really does every so often just have these like ideas and themes that I think are so interesting and just so interesting, and would be so interesting if they were explored in a less convoluted way. And one of them is when I was talking about, when I sort of said I wanted to put a pin in Maeve and her child, one of the most interesting things about the show to me is this idea that, and I almost don't know, I mean, it's not a bug in the sort of creator's mind, but this idea that what makes someone seem like they're human is to care about dumb human things. Like, if you were going to make a robot from scratch, in no other version of a robot have I ever like seen it where the sort of their literally motivating principle is just frail human affection for their family, which drives is the thing that's driving Dolores, is the thing that's driving Maeve. Like, these very like, it almost like seems like a defect, right? But it's sort of like the thing that actually makes them have emotions and feelings. And I can never quite tell, because we don't ever get to dig into that, I can never quite tell what the show thinks makes the hosts work. Really, like, similarly to the Logan, like in the last episode, there's sort of we meet Logan, who's not really Logan, but who's like the computer, and he's sort of showing Bernard and Dolores around, and he's explaining that humans are just algorithms. But then he's also saying that all of James Delos is like narrows down to this one moment where he never sees Logan again, and I kind of can't figure out how those things line up, where it's like, this, we've created these fantastical machines, but then we also keep saying over and over that like the one thing that's most important is just like these momentary human interactions. And I was just like, I would like a little more space around those stuff for like them to sort of explore that. That was me like making a mash of that.
I think I know what they were saying there, though I'm not sure it was compelling. I think what they were saying was basically like the fact that like the robots have knobs where you can like, you know, turn up an emotion or turn down a tendency is what makes them superior to humans, or in fact allows them to achieve free will when humans cannot. You know, it's saying, you know, basically it's saying that humans, no matter what,
right,
know,
humans can't change, and
they can't change, and that's illustrated in that, you know, one decisive moment in Delos's life, whereas robot, you know, maybe the hosts come in to the world with like a certain set of priors or tendencies, but at some point, if they wanted, they could choose to change themselves.
You know, I think that the show introduced what to me is this really interesting idea in the last episode. Like, it's sort of in the fourth episode, which is the one where we find out, you know, Peter Mullen's character Delos has kind of been in this kind of, you know, recurring loop of the synthetic version of him that they're trying to perfect. It kind of it starts to go to a, the show starts to go to a place that I really liked when the old Joss Whedon show Dollhouse went to, which is, you know, if you have this technology, the ultimate end game is immortality. If you can build bodies and put consciousnesses in them, eventually, instead of putting an artificial consciousness in there, what if you could take transplant a human consciousness and just keep putting it in new bodies? And we find out that the problem with that in the last episode is that they keep sort of asymptotically approaching perfection. You know, they'll run, you know, tens and hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of versions of these things, and they keep kind of getting close to the human being, but not quite getting it right. And they eventually tell us that the problem with that is that they've been assuming, they keep making the human models more and more complex. And they realize that the problem is actually that humans are much simpler than that, that if you just kind of track their, you know, behavior, instead of trying to, you know, mimic all these other more complicated things, that the things that drive humans are actually very simple. And then maybe that's what gives the hosts more free will, as they have, they do have a core directive, but it can be changed. So I think the idea that humans are not nearly as complex as we think we are, and the things that drive us are basically very, you know, this decisive moment or something, is like, that's an interesting idea. I just kind of wish show had done something with it.
It's also like, but it does also just lay out, I mean, it just seems like where the show is going is that there is no difference between humans and hosts in any meaningful way. And like, you know, everyone, the hosts and the guests and the hosts, the humans and the robots sort of have a disagreement about this. But us watching, like, it sort of seems like that disagreement is less and less meaningful. Like, if humans are also just even an even simpler algorithm than the hosts, but, and we're all sort of guided by, you know, just our, basically, like, the only thing that's real for us is our love of, our, like, people we already loved. And if, like, for Dolores, for example, like, she is bought completely into the idea that the real world is real, even though really what's the difference? Like, if your consciousness is free in outer space, and like, it seems like some of these distinctions are like just very human distinctions that a robot might not have. But just to say that there seems like the show is going in a direction where there is no difference, like, for us watching. So then it's this kind of like, and they've actually killed all the humans. It's almost like the hosts have already won. Like, how could we be rooting for anybody else? But since hosts are basically just people who can like, who have access to like super drugs to change their personalities on the fly and like learn whatever they need to learn. Like, it just seems they've almost erased the distinction to the point of it. Like, it doesn't, it's going to have less and less sort of like currency as the show goes on.
Yeah, I feel like they kept doing that with, I don't really think the robots are changing their core directives, because with Maeve and with Teddy and with, I keep messing up his name, Akichata, they keep returning to the same thing they were initially programmed with. And I think that was one of the points, or I don't even know if it's a point the show is intentionally trying to make, where humans do irrational things based on some primal instinct that we don't really understand. Like, why do we really care about our kids that much? But the robots are doing the same thing. They have the same core directive, and they're not changing it. They just keep returning it no matter how much other people try to change it. And I think that that's collapsing the distinction between the humans and the robots even more, where it's, they're just as irrational as humans. They just can turn down their pain tolerance.
Right, and they die less quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, that also, like, there's just some nonsense stuff that makes you really worried about next season, which is, I thought the entire last totally mystifying conversation between Bernard and Dolores, like, I guess Charlotte Dolores had built herself a new body where she could be Dolores in the privacy of her own home or something.
Yeah, exactly. She can't go outside because all the humans would recognize who
she is. Well, I mean, I guess if she's in the real world, not everyone would recognize her. But it's just very hard for me to imagine that show set in the real world, like an actual... But anyway, but that whole conversation where they're like, we, for totally elliptical reasons, have to be enemies, and that will make our race survive. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense at all, but I guess it does set up another season where there's tension and you guys are fighting. Do you know, like, did that not like make your heart sink? Just to think, we're just going to have you guys like Bernard and Dolores fighting over the fate of the hosts in some undisclosed human, like, probably not actually exterior location.
Yeah, are they just going to be creating more hosts just to live in the real world?
Can they create hosts
in Tessa's body? Dolores is in Dolores'
body. Well,
maybe
she's in both of them, but they don't have any extra brains to put in them. Like,
did she put Teddy in there? What's happening?
What's happening, guys? Do you have any answers for any of those questions or any of those complaints?
I mean, they show that Charlotte has the milky body maker thing in her house, and you know, we know that I guess.
Wasn't that Ford's house?
I thought that was Arthur's house.
No, it was Arnold's house.
Right, Arnold's.
It's Arnold's house that we saw them building, you know, earlier in the season in one of those flashbacks. Yeah, but so she has the body maker, and we know that I think maybe both Dolores and Bernard have the capability to make new brains, because Dolores is, it turns out, actually the one who created Bernard.
But like she Arnold didn't, but she just coded
made Dolores
it.
So she can make Bernard,
but
yes.
But didn't she code it? I mean, like, can they just make brains from scratch? Like, they can just, they know how to do that?
I'm sure they'll come up with a way. Because otherwise, they're going to only have, like, four hosts, you know, or
yes.
six or something. So they need more, they're probably going to need more than that. So they will find a way.
I find that also on it, like, if you're going to go, like, have a human robot, like, war, like, do it with numbers. You know what I mean? Like, this is like sleeper agents. It just doesn't. Also, it's like sleeper agents who just want exactly what humans want. Like, at some point, it's like, what? I know this is sort of the point of all, like from Blade Runner, like all robot movies, where it's like, what does it matter? Maybe there is no different. It's our human biases that are like, and race, and like robot racism that is like purporting that there's some difference between us. But there have to be some actual stakes. And there, right now, it feels like there are no stakes. Like, I'm totally convinced they're completely human and that the humans are going to all die and that we won't lose anything.
Yeah, I wrote a piece for the site last week about these kind of extinction narratives that are going on about in you know, Westworld and Jurassic World and a bunch of other places where humanity is kind of dying out. And then there's this kind of vague idea, which Jonathan Nolan has also talked about in interviews, too, about, you know, how, you know, the hosts can eventually kind of come along and replace us. But the only thing that's remotely better about the hosts on the show is that they just haven't fucked things up yet. They're not necessarily any better than us. They just haven't done the horrible things that we've done yet, but it's really just that they haven't had a chance.
I mean, and they have
and like on Earth really went all out.
I mean, they have done all the horrible things. It's in a contained location. They didn't build themselves, but like they're more than willing to, it seems like they're more than willing to just do whatever.
Yes. The beginning scenes when she was just hanging people in like party attire. I was like, this is extra. I get it. You're mad.
That's another thing I thought that was really interesting about the early episodes that I felt like the season did not follow through on, was like the beginning premise was like, this is the race war. This is the sex war. Like, this is the war where the underclass over, like the slaves overcome their masters, and like, there's going to be, we're going to think about what that actually looks like and what that means and how that feels. But I really don't think they did that, because they basically made them so bad. They made them sort of so, their hosts, so, or they made Dolores' team, like, so gnarly and human and messed up and bad, like, just from the beginning. And that and then they got so lost in Bernard's, like, head that a lot of that story just disappeared. And I mean, maybe they just weren't willing to take it seriously because, you know, whatever. Everyone just becomes the thing they hate or something. But it did feel like there was material there. They were like talking about the reckoning, and then they just sort of stopped.
I feel like to have that war, you would have to have compelling human figures, and you had none. Yeah, except for Lee.
Yeah, it's true. Lee was, shout outs to Lee.
Shout out to Lee, yeah.
I liked Lee.
He was good.
Can we talk about the Man in Black's sort of family narrative, which was laced through the season? I thought that was interesting. I mean, a lot of that took place, and, you know, so, you know, there were two main timelines, one immediately after the robots revolt, one a few weeks later. But then they spent a lot of time, I don't know, at various points in the past of the Man in Black or William.
And Dolores' past, too.
And Dolores' past, too. And so we saw a little bit of – we saw Westworld raising venture capital. Very exciting. We learned about the family dynamics that we got a hint of in the first season. You know, William is sort of trying he's engaged to the daughter of Delos, who is the head of the corporation that early on basically buys or increases its investment in Westworld. The father figure becomes sick and dies, and William becomes the head of this company. You know, we learned, you know, as we discussed, we learned that basically they cloned Delos over and over and over, you know, for, you know, several decades, right up until the present of the show, and it always fails in one way or another. We learned a bit more about the Man in Black's wife, who killed herself, and his daughter, who also shows up in one of the parks. In fact, in a different park, I think in episode 4 or 5. And then eventually they'll
join up
in the Raj, which is sort of, I guess, based on like colonial India,
mm-hmm.
where people go to
shoot
go elephant hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Tigers. And then eventually the man in black ends up, you know, he's on this quest. Whereas in the first season, he thought that this notion of the maze was a puzzle that he could solve. In fact, it was, you know, the journey of the host towards consciousness. This time, in fact, you know, Ford did create some kind of game for him. And over the season,
did we ever find out what that was, though?
Yeah, because what is the game?
Yeah, I don't know. It became clear over the season that the man in black was convinced wrongly that there was a game that had been planned for him. And he was like constantly seeing that game everywhere. But in fact, no one gave a hoot about him. And he was fixated on this, on the maze that, as you say, meant something else, and kept encountering people and being like, oh, Ford, you're really getting me now. And it was like, nope, that's really not what this is about. You're having like a myopic view of a completely self-involved view of all the events around you. You think there was actually something else happening?
I come to think of it, I don't realize what Ford's endgame was, but I think I don't think that the show, for all its like the way it confuses you, I don't think it often like shows you things that are like just in one character's head. So I think there were, at least early on in the show, there did seem to be characters that were speaking to the man in black in Ford's voice. And then later we do learn actually that Ford basically, before he was killed by Dolores at the end of season one, he did upload his consciousness into the park and was sort of pulling some strings behind the scenes and, you know, for much of the season. I think basically the man in black did not have a quest in the first season. That was a thing that he, in that one, he decided that it was all about him, that Westworld was his universe and he was the one who would understand it. And I think maybe at some point Ford realizes this and said, you know, basically says, you know, you want a quest, I'll give you a quest. And it just might be that it's like a stupid fucking quest.
I'm pretty convinced that his quest was a non-quest, that it was like a quest in his mind and he was interpreting information incorrectly as a result of that.
I feel like
fantasy.
The show just dropped that plot line halfway through the show, because I do remember what Jonathan was talking about, where characters would talk to the man in black in Ford's voice. But then that just stopped happening like halfway through the show.
Well, I mean, it turns out that the park did go completely to shit. So like there were other things happening maybe.
Well, I think also at some point Ford's consciousness got like kind of wiped from the system. Oh, because they blew up the cradle. It's all coming together on the show right now for me.
Was the intimation, I have another question, which is the intimation that, so if Bernard is Arnold's consciousness, so like that's an example of a human consciousness that was basically reanimated in a clone. Does that suggest that she, I mean, they haven't gotten out of the park, so maybe it doesn't work, but like I guess Delos didn't either. But does that suggest that she has figured out how to clone humans in a way where they don't go crazy, like where they can have fidelity and also survive?
Well, I think the difference is that Bernard is not Arnold. He's like a riff on Arnold.
Okay.
I feel like the way they figure out how to get fidelity is not to just upload someone's consciousness, but she had to constantly program him over and over.
Right.
So by getting someone to just talk to them over and over, just not putting someone's brain inside of a host.
Well, they
body.
Do that. We're doing that with Delos too, right? Like,
but it never worked.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question. That room that we see them in at the very end of the pre-credit scene, that sort of little rectangular room where Dolores is kind of like briefing him, is that just a riff on the room that we've been seeing the two of them in, you know, for the whole show? Or is the implication that actually that entire time frame has been at the end of the story that we've only now caught
up to? I think it's both.
I
think it might be both. I think it's a riff, but it's also, you're also supposed to be like, oh, when was everything that we saw happening? When was she programming him? When was all of this happening and where was it happening?
Is this now?
Yeah, and I think also in that scene when it begins, you know, Bernard is wearing his normal clothes and Dolores is wearing, you know, her like prairie dress, and then you know, there's like a quick cut and she's wearing
stilettos and a really tiny miniskirt. Yep, totally.
Yeah, and Bernard is naked.
Exactly what you wear for the robot revolution.
You're right, Bernard was also naked. So equal opportunity nonsense.
Yeah. So I couldn't tell if that was like that was to indicate that there are two timelines there or if it was just like a stylistic flourish.
Wait, can I tell you guys my pettiest complaint about this season?
Isn't that why we're here?
Yeah, but this is like really, one actually almost drove me, made me most angry, even though it's the most straightforward, which is Akichita's wife, girl, his like love, his true love, is she at least 30 years younger than him? I'm like, I'm not trying to be whatever, but like, he's a very compelling character, but that person is his daughter's age at best. Like, she might be, I was so irked that they did not select a more age-appropriate honey for him, because it just reflects to me like some of the actual nonsense that's going on, it's a meta aggravation with the show.
Well, wasn't part of the idea that she'd been kind of rebooted a bunch of times and he had not? Like, he was still a sort of alpha.
But they don't age. They don't age. Like, the hosts don't age. And the whole point is that she was, I mean, he knew when she became someone different. So, like, I think that she has to be the same in all those ways. So, I call bogus on that. I just think it's like, she's just like 40 years younger than him.
Oh, 100%. My petty complaint was, why did Dolores' hair look so good? That is not how curly hair works, and I'm upset. The entire time I was like, her perfect ringlets looked the same as when she was painting. This makes no sense. No one here on this show has curly hair, I can tell.
Yeah.
This is why they deserve to succeed us, is because they have better hair.
That's true. I did find Teddy's stuff kind of moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that you're right, he couldn't actually be someone different.
Mm-hmm. My favorite part of the show is when we saw James Marsden's butt. It was a really great scene. I think we should all talk about it more.
There are more to talk about?
It was just a perfect butt, but continue.
I did think it was also really funny when they had their like love scene where they were like, this is supposed to be so schmoopy. So it's like all like romantic and soft lit. And then you're like, but it's still dumb. Like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
What are your petty complaints, gentlemen?
Wait, I have something I liked.
Oh, okay. You could have petty.
Okay, I liked the joke that I feel like they kind of made. I don't know if it was a joke, but I found it very amusing. The sort of acknowledgement that the writing of the character of like the host in Westworld and like the dialogue that they've been given is just like total like hack dialogue. Like when they make it to Shogun World and it turns out that all of the characters, you know, have an equivalent in that world, not because of like, you know, basically because like the writers of Westworld had run out of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Sizemore admits like, you know, yeah, we just kind of did the same thing over here too. And then like, you know, later when Lee Sizemore goes out, he sort of, you know, majestically reads his own hack dialogue and goes out in like a blaze of glory. I thought that was kind of amusing, both as an element of like the show as well as like maybe a comment on the show itself.
No, I thought that was great, except that monologue was so bad that even though when he was giving it, I was like, this is a really bad, and you're also delivering it in a weird growly voice. But I liked Lee Sizemore. And I actually just think that whole Maeve storyline was really good. And I even thought the very last when Clementine is sort of coming in her wake, she's making the hosts all turn against each other and kill each other, and Maeve for like that one last second holds them all up, like makes them have a wall so that her daughter and basically a version of her can escape into the good place. Like, that was such a beautiful shot.
It was,
you know, talk about Renaissance paintings or whatever, but like that was a really, I thought that was really beautiful. And I said, that was like, that was just like a much more grounded storyline where you knew what everybody wanted. You understood why they wanted it. It was moving. It had like some, obviously a ton of sci-fi stuff in it, but it wasn't just like chopped up to be confusing. I really do think that the Westworld people could do that. I just don't think they want to do that. And I actually think, a lot of the stuff, I think almost everything they did like wouldn't have been worse. It would have been better if we knew it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just even like when Elsie dies, like the last, like where they started to jump within time within the shorter period of time, where it starts to be like Bernard has like after Bernard and Dolores have had their confrontation, but suddenly Bernard is like back at headquarters, and then he's also seeing Elsie. Like when they're trying to get into his head, I understand that it was supposed to imitate his mind, but that to me just was like extremely undermining, to be like, oh, we're not just in two storylines now, we're in like storyline 2A and 2B and 2C.
Right. I mean, I was, you know, excited at the beginning of the season when they had this. They seemed to have this idea that, you know, the structuring kind of, I don't know, the structuring idea for the season was going to be kind of, you know, filtering everything through Bernard's consciousness and maybe 10 episodes in a row of 10 episodes of Westworld, which is what, like 17 hours? I don't know. That would have been too much. But I felt like a really, you know, they tried to bring that idea back at the end, and I went back and watched some of the, you know, the first episode of this season, and there's a lot of visual parallels there, but I just don't think that came together in a way. And it's one of the interesting things about Westworld is, you know, Jonathan Nolan before this show was really best known for having, you know, co-written most of his, you know, brother Christopher's movies, which have a lot of the same structural gimmicks, another fondness for dead wives as a character building element. Can't do a Nolan project without that. And this is really, Westworld kind of shows me like what Christopher Nolan movies would be like if Christopher Nolan didn't direct them. He's evidently bringing quite a lot to the party, because it just, you know, the stuff just feels kind of scrambled in a way that it is tricky, but doesn't really, you know, add a lot of, you know, thematic meaning or character building or anything like that. It's just kind of to keep your, you know, left brain occupied while you're trying to, you know, figure out if this is before the last scene or after it.
Do you guys want, I found another thing that was interesting, promising about this season, but I thought they just went in the immortality direction, which fair enough, was the set of privacy concerns was like, it was, I mean, it's similar. It's like there was all this stuff there, which is like, was very timely, which is like the reckoning, literally the word, the reckoning. And then also this idea that they're just stealing all your data all the time. But then they kind of, you know, they didn't actually care about that, which maybe we don't care about in real life either. So maybe that's extremely apropos. But I couldn't tell if they had could have gone somewhere like a little. I mean, I guess when Charlotte's like, it doesn't matter. They won't care if we basically figure out how to make everyone live forever. Which is probably true. John, do you have any thoughts about that particular aspect of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting that this season arrived at the same time that there was this interesting national debate about data privacy. Similarly, that debate, which, you know, which I'm talking about the Cambridge Analytica scandal, in which it turned out that, you know, the voter data firm that had done work for the Trump campaign and the Ted Cruz campaign had inappropriately accessed, you know, a huge amount of Facebook data. And similarly, that issue, you know, created a lot of hoopla and sort of ignited a lot of drama and then kind of petered out in the public's consciousness. You know, so I can't really knock the show for doing something similar.
Yeah.
I feel like that's part and parcel with the show, where they have these themes that could be really interesting if they develop them further. I'm thinking about the racial dynamics of Westworld, where there's all of the worlds are set in this mythical time space where white people kind of rule supreme, except for Shogun World. But they all traffic in these racial stereotypes. And it's not ever, I'm never sure if the show is trying to make us think about these themes and what we're doing and what people would want to go to and what rich white people would really want a magical theme park full of robots who could do whatever they want to look like, or if they're just trafficking in those same stereotypes. And I can't tell if it's a critique or if they're just dumb.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a very interesting and good piece, I think, written at the end of last season, thinking about race and Westworld and like the Civil War and that being the setting, which I would totally mangle if I tried to articulate its argument because I read it too long ago. But it is, I mean, I don't know, because there's also no black characters in there are no robots that are, you know, and that's the only thing that we care about. I mean, there is Bernard, but he's like not, he's not yeah, an active.
Maeve.
And Maeve, right?
Yeah. But it seems like everyone ignores race. Like, even in the first season, where it's like the Confederados, I'm like, they're Confederate soldiers and they're just black robots wandering around, and this doesn't make sense just logistically. It's weird that it's a post-racial society, but it's also not.
Right. Well, in a way, that to me, it's like the idea that the guests would like to think they're post-racial, but also like super enjoying killing and like getting to do whatever they want to, like to be like colorblind, but also then horrible to mm-hmm. people of other races seems like very accurate, kind yeah. of like that's yeah. what a lot. But I don't know if the show, like, I think you're right that I'm not sure if the show like knows that that's what it's doing mm-hmm. or if that just like happens to be. It's like Girls in that way, where like Lena Dunham, like, did she know that that's an accurate reflection of white people, like rich white girls in New York City's world, to just like live in a monoculture, or did it just accidentally resemble reality?
I feel like the show, like Girls, kind of half knows it, like it's aware of it, but not enough to actually do anything about it or kind of meaningfully critique it. Like it's in there. I mean, it's, you know, it's set in the Old West. You know, and they have, you know, prominent characters who are Black and Native American. And I think they're, you know, yes. You know, so how could you not be aware of like some of that? But the show just doesn't do anything with it. And I feel like it's called Westworld. The buy-in is you have to assume that, you know, in the future, given sort of unlimited resources, these largely white wealthy clients would for some reason choose to, out of all the possible fantasy worlds they could live in, would some for some reason choose to live in like Cowboy Town. Which just seems like a pretty basic, I feel like you could
error.
Do better.
I mean, yeah. That's just like leftover from being like the Michael Crichton, like the original. I mean, it's like leftover from the original because it's a funny comment on like how the Western has actually died in contemporary culture, and that's like what nobody yeah. would want. I mean, this also goes back to the point that was made when it first came out, which is like this is so the show is so heterosexual in the sense of like who like any why would any you know that where's gay the gay version of Westworld and like where people are just doing other totally different stuff with totally different kinds of robots. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like. All three of the worlds we know about. And do we also see a medieval, there's Shogun World, the Raj, Westworld. Was there anyone where there's like medieval, I bet it like feels like there should be like knights somewhere, but maybe,
yeah,
I don't know
if we saw it.
There's a Roman world in the movies, but not in this one. You sort of get a taste of it in like Delos's mansion is kind of, you know, Romanesque, but you don't really.
I feel like none of those
they have
are
these
like,
other kind of.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are three worlds that are established, but not. We don't know what they are yet, and those are just kind of.
I feel like those are like not top 10, like most people's fantasy historical period.
Yeah, which is why it's so interestingly you pick these to show when they're all predicated on whites, except for Shogun World.
You could kind of imagine the Civil War straight up being a lot of Americans.
Oh, that's true.
Version of like an event, like do you know what I mean? Like a meaningful time to
travel
live and
to.
Fight.
Yeah. That is true. I mean, I saw Civil War reenactments when I lived in Texas, so we're still doing that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't tell because the show is relatively diverse, but it's also, except for Bernard, everyone is, at least in the first season, very much in a stereotypical role where, like, the madam is kind of a racialized role in, like, prostitution. And then, obviously, Akechata is, like, a very Western view of, like, it's like very like savage, like what's going on in the Shogun world is straight out of like, it just looks exactly what people think Japan looks like now. And so,
I mean, isn't that part of the point that like, basically like the people that made this place have biases and then sometimes the hosts themselves sort of cut against them. I mean, I think, I mean, I'm not sure that they achieved that with, Akechata, but, it seems like,
yeah,
I mean, basically, like it's a each world is a cliche, and like you know, the people writing them have like, you know, are sort of like writing with cliches in mind, and like Westworld is not an accurate version of the West, but it's like the West of John Ford movies, and then and maybe that's just because that's what Ford, who now I'm realizing his last name is probably no accident, you know that's like what he was into.
I thought this was most stark almost with the Akechita storyline because it's just very interesting to think about. There were some moments that were sort of graceful where you're like, but then you're wondering like, is this from what I've learned in like history class in high school about Native Americans? Where you're like, oh, so you're this whole character and this whole experience has been scripted and created by worker bees, who have shown like no actual like attention to detail, particularly about sort of some of these questions, but maybe are here have like tried to create, because there were just like there's ways that he talks about about the newcomers, right? That's like very like, it's sort of like Christopher, it's like, it's sort of the narrative of like Native Americans were living here and then these people came and like killed them and destroyed everything. So it's like, it mirrors that narrative in a way that I sort of actually thought was sort of elegant, but it is like, it did make me think like, oh, like who is actually the person? This isn't a real person. Like this is a programmed person. So like, how is this information getting to us on screen and like even getting into the park? And it's just like some white guy sitting in headquarters, like programmed the situation to sort of look like what we think it looks like, but in a way that's like kind of elegant. And I think that's the whole, and that's like the whole show. And it is true that they have this like escape hatch where it's like, do we have to know what we're doing? Because we have like, because the people on the show also are just like us and don't know what they're doing. I mean, you know, in that moment, like where they were doing the Akeisha storyline, the way that Westworld and making a TV show actually just like kind of line up 100%, where it's like, which they joke about and which is what sort of like the Lee Sizemore lines about the bad dialogue, but it's like, right, like if you're going to make a world for someone at home watching to have it sort of feel true, you're just faking it exactly in the same way that the people making Westworld are faking it. And like, there's no actual difference. It's always fakery. It's just whether or not like it's kind of convincing or well done or something.
Right. I mean, that's kind of the genius and the sort of like cop out of the show is that, oh no, that's not hack dialogue. It's dialogue written by our hack dialogue writer character. And the same thing with the kind of racial stereotype is like, no, that's because the guy who wrote them is bad, not because we don't know any better. But at a certain point, like as they say in the TV business,
it's a bad rap for all of them, like all the hosts. Like it sucks for all of them.
Yeah,
and they're all. Yeah, I mean, as the show begins, also they're all like reduced characters, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're stuck in these ruts, being traumatized and abused over and over and over and over again. Every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys wish would happen next on the show?
I mean, I really like the sort of the flash forward for me is by far the most interesting part of this, like the idea of the genuinely, I prefer the kind of post-dystopia, post-apocalyptic to the pre-apocalyptic. So I think that, you know, I would be fine with them just, and this is, they have said this is not what they're doing. So I'm genuinely wishing for something that I know is not going to happen, at least in the next season. But that to me is, you know, it's like the epilogue episodes that ended both seasons of Dollhouse. Like I thought those retroactively made what had happened before so much interesting, which in some cases is, you know, profoundly unsatisfying. Just the idea that it could go there, and like the ultimate end game of this is these sort of, you know, half human host hybrids trapped in this sort of, you know, purgatorial consciousness loop where they're constantly trying to and failing to make up for their own mistakes. I don't know how you do that for 10 episodes, let alone how many seasons they have left, but I really like that idea. I wish they would pursue it more.
Can I ask just before we on our way to the wrap up, wasn't it intimated or discussed in the first season that like the real world was like they'd solved it, like there was no disease and there was no adventure, and that's why people were coming to Westworld? Am I making that up?
Yeah, I feel like that was one of the primary motivations of why people come to Westworld, because there's no violence or anything in the real world anymore. They've just solved everything, which makes this robot uprising going to be really stressful for a lot of people.
Totally.
But rich people can still get heroin.
Oh, yeah, totally. Right. That's true. Maybe it is
rich
more like...
Rich people can get whatever they want.
I have a wait, don't tell me style answer to your question.
Okay.
I
don't know what that means. Does that mean never, it's a bad
That doesn't
joke?
Mean anything. no, I hope that next season it becomes a workplace drama in which Dolores as Charlotte Hale navigates the complex politics of the Delos Corporation, where it turns out that her employees are like the hosts and she is the cruel master, leading to further revelations and self-examination.
Well, I did this along these lines. I also am just like very curious. Like I know you guys have explained to me that there's like one body machine in Ford's and like in Bernard's house, but I'm just like, I don't think she has access to the resources she needs to like do what she wants to do. And I don't understand why Charlotte wasn't fired. Can someone explain to me why everybody who wasn't involved in the park has a job? Like they should have just bombed that whole thing and everyone's fired. Like it just seems so preposterous that she's still employed, right?
I think they really wanted what was in Peter Abernathy's head, and they were probably going to fire her when she got to the mainland. I don't know whether
or not. But did they get it? I don't understand. Did they get it?
I think they did. No.
But like, so the last time we, even if it still is around, even if it's still in the forge, when we were last in the forge, Charlotte and Bernard killed everybody.
Yeah.
So I guess she could have given it to them as her. But I mean, like, I just don't, I kind of don't understand if they got it.
Or does Charlotte have it now? Is that kind of her, you know, whole card? I mean, does she have?
Well, she must have the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ball of Peter
Abernathy.
Yeah,
it's like one of the balls of the, like, yeah, one of the balls in her bag was the data in Peter Abernathy's head. What the other three were is up for debate, but yeah, I don't really know.
So then Delos is like, cool, we don't have that data, and we just had a huge, we just killed hundreds of people. You keep your job, and we're going to keep the park open. Like, do you know what I'm saying? I just don't understand. Like, that's time to cut your losses, probably.
Everyone should get fired. I don't know why Charlotte Hill wasn't fired. I don't know what she's done so far other than, like, kill her employees.
Wanton killing of everybody.
Yeah.
So Rachel, we'll see Rachel's turn.
I want the entire show to be about Maeve.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. I just want her. I don't know what her motivation is going to be anymore. And now that her daughter is in the good place, I just want Maeve and Felix and Lee and Hector Escatone to come back and do something. I don't know what though.
Yeah. I guess I feel like there's no way they can leave the park. Because there's just so much that does not make sense about them existing in the real world. And I don't think they've ever shown us really the real world. But I don't understand at the same time how they can continue to be in the park. I feel like they're going to just do whatever they want. But it just really felt to me like they were like, we wrote a whole... Like, they had to start have a fresh start. And that fresh start is not like that convincing to me. But I mean, they're just doing like Robot Uprising in the real world.
Yeah.
Robots will win and they'll just be bad as us. That's robots the end of Westworld, guys.
If they figure out how to make the brains in their little milk machine thing that was happening.
The machines are super cool.
They are. They are really dope.
I mean, if the idea is just basically that, you know, creatures are creatures and no matter how many times you repeat the same scenario, they will always end up making the same decisions, then maybe that is true for species as well. And then robots will take over and then just do all the same dumb shit that humans did the first time
around. They already, like, that just can't be the conclusion because that's already apparent. Do you know, like, that just seems so, I just feel like they got so brutal so fast that I'm just like, there is, as I said before, there's no difference. There's no meaningful difference already. So the queen is dead. Long live the queen. It's just like.
Long live Queen Dolores.
Exactly.
I just don't know what the end game is.
Yeah, how do you destroy humanity successfully?
With six robots. So yeah. Far.
Is that like then they're the president?
She becomes the president
and it just nukes everyone. I don't
I would watch President Dolores. I would watch that show.
Well, maybe we just figured it out. Or Queen Dolores or something.
Queen Dolores. She I feel like Dolores has turned into Khaleesi from Game of Thrones for me, where at first I was really rooting for her and now I'm just really annoyed every time she talks.
Let's end on that dig at Game of Thrones because we'll probably be back talking about that show in a year and a half. The plot that I hope that listeners understand that is because the plot was really confusing and maybe as our conversation suggested in some key ways totally beside the point because like you get the gist even if you don't actually know the details even as you're watching, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for listening to us try to spoil Westworld but find it almost unspoilable, like too inchoate and confusing. We did talk about it a lot. So for Rachel and Sam and John and Dan, I'm Willa Paskin. And we'll see you next time talking about something probably much more coherent.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.